Okay, let's begin. We're going to talk about the Mitzvah of Shofar. The Mitzvah of Shofar actually has a lot of components. We're not going to be able to touch on all the details of it. What I hope to talk about is quite a number of the halachot of Shofar, and we're going to probably spend the second half of this year calculating the Shofar blast, trying to figure out where the practice is to blow 100 Shofar blasts, which is a fairly common practice. We're gonna go through from hopefully from beginning to end to get to somewhere closer to that number, where that number comes to be, what exactly is Delraita, what isn't, and we're going to talk about other halachot along the way. The first thing that we should note is, and this is pretty interesting that people probably don't even realize, is that the Torah tells us in Source 1, V'chodesh ha'shvi'i be'achal l'chodesh mekar kodesh yelachem, kom lachet avodah lo tasu yom trua yelachem. You should have a day of trua. So the Torah doesn't even tell us to blow shofar. Right? A lot of times, you know, you ask anybody, what's the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, and the answer is to blow shofar. You have to, the Gemara is going to make drashot to explain that you blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. But the Torah doesn't say blow shofar, it just calls it a day of trua, a day of shofar. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, and this is really where where we have a reference to blowing shofar comes from Source 2, from Yovel. On Yovel, on Yom Kippur, you blow shofar, and the Torah says in the second pasuk, "V'ha'avarta shofar trua b'chodesh hashvi'i b'esor l'chodesh b'yom ha'kippurim taviru shofar b'chol artzechem." That you should, in here it means to blow the shofar, sound the shofar. So the Torah doesn't say sound the shofar by Rosh Hashanah, and calls it Yom Teruah, calls it in other places Zichron Teruah. And on Yovel is where the Torah says blow the shofar. So this is actually going to, I think, be lurking in the background for a lot of the Shir, is the fact that the Torah doesn't necessarily, is not explicit in blowing the shofar, is not explicit in the amount of blast you have to do, and the Torah instead tells us to make it a day of shofar blowing, make it into a day of shofar blowing, which is going to give maybe a bit more leeway into what exactly we have to do. Yeah.
And the mitzvah is hearing it.
We're going to talk about that. That's going to be one of the things we're going to talk about. Hold on. We're going to have to see. That we're going to have to see more of that. What do you base that on?
That I always salt it and wash. It's not
to the bracha. The bracha that we make is about hearing the shofar. That's so that was certainly would imply...
the bracha is...
It's about listening to the shofar,
right,
which would certainly imply that the mitzvah is to listen. We're going to see that might not be, not all the Rishonim are going to agree to that.
Because supposedly I learned that if somebody had a stolen shofar,
they
blew it,
they would fulfill the mitzvah.
You would still be
according to the Rambam.
It's not the shofar.
According to the Rambam, yeah.
Okay,
the Rambam passes that way. The question there is why you would fulfill it, which... So basically, just jumping the gun already into the shir, there's going to be a big discussion about whether the mitzvah is to blow the shofar or to listen to the shofar or both. So there's really four options: blow the shofar, listen to the shofar, both blow and listen to the shofar, and the fourth option is really going to come from one of the Rishonim suggests also is the fact that the Torah says Yom Teruah, do whatever you want. Anyway, anything you're going to do is going to create a Yom Teruah. That's the whole point. If you're trying to create a Yom Teruah, it doesn't matter. Blow it, listen, who, it doesn't matter. As long as you have as long as there's a shofar there and it's being blown.
Okay,
so those are going to be the four the options. Mainly, we're between listening and blowing. It's a separate shir in and of itself. There's a lot of Gemaras, various parts of Gemaras in Rosh Hashanah that imply one way or the other. So a lot of the Rishonim and certainly a lot of the Achronim have long essays trying to whichever approach you take, blowing or listening. There's going to be some Gemaras that are against it, and everybody's trying to figure out how to fit all the Gemaras in with all the opinions. Okay, so like for example, the Gemara says if you blow a shofar into a pit, you don't fulfill your obligation. So in that case, you blew a shofar, there was an act of blowing, but you didn't listen to it because you heard the echo. So that implies that the mitzvah is to listen to the shofar. There's another Gemara that says that Chereshot Vekantan cannot blow it. If the whole goal is just to listen, it shouldn't really matter who's blowing it. That implies that the mitzvah is to blow it. So, and everybody's going to answer these questions differently. They're going to say that for example, for the Katan, is that he can't produce a sound that's fit for listening because he's not bar mitzvah yet. So they're going to, you know, that's the defense for listening. It's very, very interesting Very interesting question, and we're going to talk a little bit about it as we go along. So for now, the Torah tells us that we have a Yom Teruah, the Torah, and the Torah actually says to blow the shofar by Yovel. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah is then going to equate the two of these. The Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan in source 3, Minayin Sheveh Shofar, right? The Torah says Yom Teruah. It doesn't even say blow, it doesn't even say use a shofar to make a Teruah. It just says maybe you could use a trumpet, maybe you could use any other animal horn. We're going to see Rabbi Slifkin tells us that some animal, probably not even using the right terminology, some animal horns are hollow, and some of them are very solid. Like a cow is a very solid horn. If it's very solid, you cannot hollow it out to use it for a shofar. It would have had to have been naturally hollow. So maybe Yom Teruah from Source 1, maybe you can take the cow horn, carve out a hole in the middle, and make it into some type of horn to blow. So the Gemara says, how do we know that we should use a shofar? Which is an interesting question, right? Rosh Hashanah blow shofar. But like we said, the Torah doesn't exactly say that. So the Gemara says, Talmud Lomar v'ha'avarta shofar trua. Because it says by, in Yovel, you should sound a trua. But then the Gemara says the obvious, but Ainli Ela b'Yovel. That's by Yovel, Rosh Hashanah minayin. How do we know for Rosh Hashanah blow shofar? Talmud Lomar b'chodesh hashvi'i. The Torah says in Parshat Behar, Vavarta Shovar Torah, Bachodesh Hashvi'i, in the seventh month, and then it says on Yom Kippur. So, She'ein Talmud Lomar Bachodesh Hashvi'i, that's extra. We don't have to say, sound a shofar in the seventh month. If the Torah right after that said, do it on Yom Kippur, we know Yom Kippur is in the month of Tishrei. So, what is it telling us? What's the Torah telling us? Ma Talmud Lomar Bachodesh Hashvi'i, She'yihyu Kol Truat Shachodesh Vi'i Zekazeh. To equate all the shofar blowings of the month of Tishrei, whenever you have to blow the shofar, whenever you have to blow something in the month of Tishrei, it's with a shofar. That's what the Torah is telling us in Parshat Behar, by Yovel. And it's telling us something else too, that we'll also come back to. Minayin shepshuta lefaneha. How do you know that you have to blow a tekiah? Pshuta is like the more like a basic note, right? It's just one note. How do you know that you have to blow a tekiah before your truah? Talmud Lomar v'ha'avarta shofar. V'ha'avarta shofar trua. Because v'ha'avarta is like a basic kind of blowing. Blow a simple note. So you blow a tekiah before. U'minayin shepshuta la'achareha. And how do you know that you should blow a tekiah after? Because at the end of the pasuk, again, we're looking at pasuk tet in source 2, again says ta'aviru shofar. So it says, first it says v'ha'avarta, that's a tekiah. Then it says shofar trua, then you blow your trua. And then the end of the pasuk again says ta'aviru, tells us that you again have a tekiah at the end of it. And then the Gemara, we won't have to see it inside. The Gemara says, okay, again, but that's only by Yovel that you need to blow tekiah, trua, and tekiah. How do you know by Rosh Hashanah too? Again, b'chodesh hashvi'i. In the seventh month, we blow all the shofar, all the blasts again are the same thing. So just like on Yovel, it's a tekiah, trua, tekiah. So too on Rosh Hashanah, it's a tekiah, trua, tekiah. Okay, questions. This is how we know we blow shofar, from the fact that the Torah does not say blow a shofar in Rosh Hashanah, but it says blow shofar on Yovel, and we extrapolate b'chodesh hashvi'i that all the times we blow shofar in the month of Tishrei are always going to be the same. Okay, in source 4, we're not going to do this inside, but I encourage you to read it, and it's part of a larger essay from Rabbi Slifkin. We were just talking about this a few minutes ago before we started this year. Rabbi Slifkin has an essay on exotic shofars, where he goes through all these animals and their horns, and what you can use for a shofar, and what you can't use, and the requirements, and he has great pictures, and it probably, some of it is the basis for his encyclopedia, Eric, like we were talking about before, mm-hmm. Because I think also there he deals with identifying what some of the animals are, which is a large part of that the encyclopedia that he wrote. So he identifies which of the animals are which. And he talks about how basically there's animals that have hollow, like we said before, animals that have hollow horns. And those are the ones that you could use for a shofar, and ones who have solid ones and you cannot use those. And even the hollow ones, there's still things you have to do. You have to cut off part of it. You still have to drill a hole so that you can make a sound in it.
At the end.
It's still
sealed at the top.
It's sealed, right? So you drill a hole through to make the sound. Apparently, they would melt it. They would heat it also so that you can bend it. Apparently, if you heat it, you could bend it. So there's some type of heating it involved. Also, in Panini Halacha, we're probably not going to do that part inside. But he talks about how in heating it, you could basically change the whole shofar around. So if you heated up your shofar and then decided to make the top of it smaller to blow through, right? And the other end of it that you normally blow through, make that wide, so kind of reverse the sides of it. That's not kosher. You just change the chauffeur. That's not kosher. He says if you heated it and you turned the whole thing inside out, that's not kosher also. So apparently there's a lot you could do with heating it.
Malleable.
Yeah, very. And he says he also says that in the Penine Halacha, he says that you have to be careful because apparently if you reverse it, it's much easier to shine. You can make it a nice, prettier chauffeur. So you got to be a little bit careful who you're buying chauffeur from to make sure that they didn't change anything around. Right, because otherwise you might have.
Okay, so going back with the seventh month.
Yeah,
but that still didn't say anything about Rosh Hashanah.
Well, the first source, Vachodesh Hashvi'i,
right.
It says Yom Trua, and then you're right. In the second source, it doesn't say that. It just says Vachodesh Hashvi'i. Every time you have to, every time you need to make a sound or produce these sounds, you should use the shofar. And so that together tells us that in Rosh Hashanah you have to use a shofar.
Wow.
Was that? Right. We have one source that tells us there's something about making sounds on Rosh Hashanah. The first source, Yom Teruah and Zichron Teruah, is about making sounds, and it's the second source. You're right. It's the second source that's telling us that we should in fact use a shofar to make those sounds, and that it should be a tekiah, Teruah, and a tekiah. Okay. So the Penine Halacha tells us we can talk a little bit here about the requirements for a shofar. So the Penine Halacha, he's quoting from Gemaras and quoting from other sources. In source 5, he says, Mitzvah shah shofar shal Rosh Hashanah yeh kafuf. The Gemara has a machlokes, if it's better to have a straight shofar or a curved shofar. And I think it's Rashi there who quotes the Rashi. I don't think it's the Gemara itself, but maybe it is. I think Rashi says that they're arguing about the best way to approach God in davening. In davening, is it better to appear humble, bent over before God, like kafuf, like a bent shofar, or is it better to be like, you know, straight up, I guess more confident? So he quotes here that the mitzvah is to have a bent shofar, l'siman shetzrichim anachnu likfof et livavenu lifnei malkom baruch hu. The point of having a bent shofar is to symbolize to us that we're bent before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're going to come to this in a little bit, connected to whether the mitzvah is to blow the shofar, to listen to the shofar, about shofar being symbolic or representative of davening. This would be a support for that idea that we use a bent shofar because in davening we try to approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu with more bent over, more humble. Umitzvah min amufchar lakachat shofar shel ayel kafuf. The best thing is to take a ram's horn. Sha'amar Rabbi Abahu, because Rabbi Abahu says in the Gemara, why do we use lama token b'shofar shel ayel? Why do we use a ram's horn? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tiku lifanei b'shofar shel ayel kidei she'eskor lachem akedat Yitzchak ben Avram. Right? So the best thing is to as a reminder of akedat Yitzchak, to use the ram's horn. Umale ani aleichem kilu akadetem atzmechem lefanei. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through this, us calling out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the ram's horn, it's going to remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Akedat Yitzchak, and it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to consider as if we had brought ourselves before him. So then he tells us here just that Hazachar HaBoger Shalmin HaKvasim Nikra Ayil. The male, an older male lamb or of that family, is called a ram. And the Nekeva, the female, is called the Rachel. The best thing is to take the male, and if not, then you can use the Rachel also, because that's still technically considered within the same family. And then he continues, and he says, if it's possible, you can either have a ram's horn that's straight, or a different animal's horn that's bent. The bent takes priority, right? I guess the reminder, the more humble, the thing that is the symbolic of being of humility, of being bent before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the one that takes the precedence. And then at the end he talks about what we mentioned before about heating it up. So this is just I thought it would be a good idea to start some basic ideas about shofar. And like I said, you can read the excerpt from Rabbi Slifkin. He talks a little bit how you make a shofar. You have to peel something off, and he talks about it there if you want to. if you want to take a look there. So the question, the next thing we're going to talk about, and we're going to talk about a few smaller ideas here before we come to the, is the mitzvah to blow or to listen, and before we come to how many blasts you have to do, which is what we're going to spend most of our time on, is what sound does a shofar have to produce? Sometimes you hear the guy, the Baal Tokei, is doing a great job, and he's producing these great sounds, and sometimes it's kind of like sputtering, it sounds very weak. What sound does the shofar have to produce? So the Panini Halacha in Hilchot Yamim Noraim, Dalid in the chapter Tetzayin. So he says, Haya kolo shel shofar gavoa ma'od o namuch ma'od o tsarur ma'od kasher shekol ha-kolo sherem b'shofar. Good to take away from here is that, a good thing to know, is that as long as it's pressed to produce a sound. Right? It doesn't matter if it's a loud, crystal clear sound or a weaker sound. As long as your shofar is producing a sound, that's good enough. And the other thing is that I think he quotes it somewhere else in there, and I think I might have seen this in the Mishnah Berurah, is that you try to hear the whole sound. If you heard like half a sound or something along those lines, then that probably would not be enough for you to have fulfilled at least. Count it as if you heard that one. So if you were like half a tekiah, and then I don't know, you sneezed, or you put both your fingers in your ear, or your kid says something right into your ear at that same point in time. If you miss some of the blast, really, the idea is to listen to the whole blast, not just half of a blast. So that's a little bit connected to this. So he tells us that, and he tells us a few other things relating to the sound. That if you decided to put gold inside your shofar or something along those lines, that's not okay, because the sound that you made is not being produced by your shofar. It's being produced by a gold inside. He says even if a lot of times if you put a decoration or you can cover the outside in gold or do something else that could potentially change the sound. If it doesn't change the sound, then it's kosher. But if it changes the sound, then you have a problem. So he recommends not even doing any, engrave. He says you could, engrave pictures. I never saw anybody, engrave any pictures on there. That's fine, but covering it with gold or covering it with a color or doing something else to it has the potential to change the sound. That would not be okay. And so the takeaway from here, and a short halacha, but an important one, is that... it doesn't really matter how strong or how weak the sounds are. The whole point is that you heard a sound come from the shofar. Okay, now we're going to come to what we'll spend a longer time on, the interesting topic of how do we define the mitzvah of shofar? Is it a mitzvah to listen or is it a mitzvah to blow the shofar? So the Rambam in Hilchot Shofar, Perek Aleph Halacha Aleph, tells us in Source 7, Mitzvat asei shel Torah lishmoa truat hashofar v'Rosh Hashanah. He tells us it's a mitzvah to listen. Shenamar yom trua yelachem. Because the Torah tells us you should make it into a day of trua. V'shofar shetokim bo bein b'Rosh Hashanah bein b'yovel hu keren hakvasim hakafuf. Rama says, like we saw earlier, that you need to have this horn of a ram that's curved or bent. V'chol ha'shofar psulin chus mikeren hakeves. The Rambam paskins that all other animals are not kosher. That's not how we paskin lahalacha, but that's what the Rambam paskins. And then he says what we saw before. V'af al pi shalon yitparish ba'torah trua ba'shofar b'Rosh Hashanah. The Torah never says use a shofar to make a trua, but harei omer biyovel v'ha'avarta shofar trua v'chulei taviru shofar. That by yovel it says to blow the shofar mipnei hashmu lamdu my trua yovel v'shofar after Rosh Hashanah v'shofar. So just like the yovel was with the shofar, so too in Rosh Hashanah is with the shofar. And the Ravid here disagrees and says that it appears that you can use other animals too. He disagrees with the Rambam's psak that we could only use a ram. So, but what's our takeaway? The reason that we just saw this now. So, the Rambam said at the beginning, "Mitzvah asei lishmoa truat shofar, to listen." And if you want to claim that for some reason the Rambam wasn't being as precise, or he really meant to blow in his tshuva, which is in the next source, he's very, very, very clear that the mitzvah is to listen to the shofar, and he brings a proof. If I recall correctly, he brings a proof, which is an interesting proof from the fact that it's not. I don't know if I would call this a halachic proof, maybe more practical proof, that if the mitzvah is to blow the shofar, what would have to happen? if the mitzvah is to blow the shofar, then everybody's going to have to take out their own shofar and start blowing. And the rabbi said, you never saw it. You never went to a shul in the whole world. Nobody ever saw a place where now it's time for shofar blowing. So everybody makes their own bracha and takes out a shofar. You know, just like we all do on Sukkot with our lulav, right? On Sukkot with lulav, there's a mitzvah to take it. So everybody's going to make a bracha and take out their lulav. He says, nobody ever saw it. On Rosh Hashanah, everybody take out their own shofar and make a bracha and start blowing it. So this is what the Rambam says in his Tshuva in Source 8. V'zesha mitzvah mechuyevet eina hatekiya ela shmiat hatekiya. If it was really blowing it, then everybody would have to take out their shofar, just like lulav, and blow it. And then he says, rather, really, and we don't blow it. And the only reason we blow it, the einanu token in the third line, ela kidei lishmoa. Right, the whole reason that you blow a shofar is because you have to listen to it, and without blowing it, you can't listen to it. But at the end of the day, the mitzvah is to listen to the shofar, says the Rambam. And this is also, we'll come back to that we'll come to Source 10 in a minute, right? In Source 9, the Rush quotes Rabbeinu Tam, and I put that in bold, who says that you should make the bracha al tekiyat shofar. Your bracha is not lishmoa kol shofar, or lishmoa bikol shofar, it's al tekiyat shofar. Mishum, and then, but the next, right, on the blowing, but mishum, and this is the line that some of the readers shown him, it's going to be a little bit, there's multiple ways to understand this. The asiyata hi gmar mitzvata. That the doing it is the completion of the mitzvah. So one way to understand that is blowing it is the completion of the mitzvah. Therefore, we make the bracha al tikiyat shofar and we blow it because that's the completion of the mitzvah. And if that's true, then Rabbeinu Tam would be of the opinion that the mitzvah is to blow the shofar. That certainly is one way that many people learn Rabbeinu Tam. Another way to learn Rabbeinu Tam, and this is more complicated, is that in general when you do an action, but the fulfillment of the mitzvah only comes as a result of the action. So Rabbeinu Tam is of the opinion that you should make your bracha on your action and not from the result of the action. So i.e., make the bracha on the action which is blowing the shofar, which is your ma'aseh mitzvah, right? That's what that would be the terminology. Your ma'aseh, the action is the blowing, and the kiyum, the fulfillment, is the listening. So it's possible to argue that Rabbeinu Tam thinks that whenever there's a separation between a ma'aseh mitzvah and a kiyum, between your action and the fulfillment, then you should make a bracha on the action, and that's why he says to make a bracha on the tekiyah, even though he might agree that you'll fulfill the mitzvah only by listening. That's one. That's the other way to learn it. The more complicated way to learn it.
The kind of look at it, his reasoning is, you can't hear it unless you blow it. So you got to first.
But how important? Right. So how important is the blowing? Is the blowing of equal importance, or greater importance, or less importance?
Well, that I don't know. But you can't hear until you blow.
Right.
So you first
according
blow.
To the second way, according to the second way, that's what he's saying. The ma'aseh is the blowing, but the key of the fulfillment, you have to blow the shofar, and you fulfill it by listening. Yeah.
So the person who actually blows shofar, it's hard to concentrate. If you're concentrating on blowing the shofar, it's very hard to concentrate. I mean, I guess by default you're hearing, but you're not really. I would imagine you're not really paying attention, or it's hard. But it's harder to pay attention.
I hear
unless,
that.
Unless you, you know.
But you hear it.
I've never tried to blow. Something.
Yeah, I'm just.
No at the end of the day, you hear it.
You're right. So I'm just thinking. I guess when you blow it, do you listen at the same time to make sure it's coming out properly, or?
I presume yes.
On your,
I think you're concentrating on blowing, yeah, but you're
blowing.
Hearing. You're hearing. I think you're hearing. You probably have that.
You definitely are hearing. Because it's here, but I mean, hey, like the same thing you said. If somebody interrupts you, you know, and you miss, you heard but you didn't really pay attention to it.
Uh-huh.
You know,
I think right, okay. I think in that case, then you fulfill a mitzvah. It's even arguable that he's in a better position because if anybody, assuming in any way that the mitzvah is to blow the shofar, there's only one person in the room.
Right. For the blind part, he's covered.
He's covered. Right. Wow. So this is, like I said, it's a shiur in and of itself. There's a lot of gemaras that go one way or the other. that we're not that are beyond the scope of our halacha shir, but it's a very, very interesting question and a ramification of this, and then we'll speak about some hashkafa about of this after in a few minutes. But a ramification is from the Rambam in source 10 that David mentioned earlier, where the Rambam says that if you stole a shofar and you blew the shofar, you fulfill the mitzvah. Usually you can't use a stolen object for your mitzvah, but in this case you stole a shofar, but the mitzvah is to listen. The mitzvah is to listen, and the Rambam has the line, "Ein b'kol din gezel." You can't steal sound. That's I think that's also a whole shiur in and of itself. How exactly that works. But the Rambam says, "Shofar hagazel." The end of the first line, "Shetaka bo yatza she'ein mitzvah ela b'shmiat hakol." It's not like you stole the sound, you stole the shofar, and then used the shofar to produce the sound. It's very different than stealing a lulav and picking it up to use your mitzvah. I'm not even sure if there's another... similar. I was going to say, I don't know if there's another example of stealing something where...
Well, it's
maybe for smell, if you steal the samim, maybe like, you know, just one of those...
It's like with an employer, in other words. If you're working for someone... and you go to do something private, you're stealing their time because they're paying you.
Okay.
So again, it's not tangible. I mean, really, I mean the time is not tangible.
I think that could be more tangible because it's measured by how much, right, you know, you get your salary per hour.
Right.
But yeah, I hear. The Rambam, I think, does give a second example that is related to this afterwards, where he says, "V'chein b'shofar shel ola." If you use a shofar from an ola, from a korban, you don't use it. "V'chein shofar shel ola lo yitaka bo." Don't use it because it's hekdesh. "V'im taka yatza she'ein b'kol din me'ila." It's the same thing. Me'ila means using hekdesh for personal use. It's the same idea. I don't know enough about this. Maybe you're chayev for me'ila, for taking hekdesh, for taking the actual shofar, that I'm not sure. But you're definitely not chayev for the sound that the shofar produced, just like the sound that you blew wasn't stolen.
Right. Okay.
So this is all from the Rambam's understanding that the mitzvah is to listen to the shofar. The ramification of that is that you could use some person. Well, it would be a sin, but if you use the stolen shofar, you would have fulfilled the mitzvah, because the mitzvah is to listen. The Ravid tells us a different logic. He says it's a gzerat hakatuv, that you could use a stolen shofar. So then, under the Ravid's understanding, even if the mitzvah was to blow the shofar, in this particular case, that you would be allowed to use it, according to the Ravid, based on the Yerushalmi. Okay, that was the Rambam. Right? What I'm trying to say here is that the Rambam lines himself up very well, because if the mitzvah is to listen, it makes sense that you could use a stolen shofar. If the mitzvah is to blow the shofar, then it's arguable you can't use a stolen object. So the Ravid says that there's the Yerushalmi quotes of a gzerat hakatuv, that the Torah actually makes an exception here and says you could use the stolen shofar. So at the end of the day, for however you understand the mitzvah is to blow it or to listen to it, you could fulfill it with a stolen object. But in source 11, the Magen Avraham tells us, you should still not make a bracha on it. Right? You have a stolen, something stolen, you fulfill your mitzvah with it, but he's not going to, don't make a bracha. Don't make a bracha on a stolen shofar if somebody stole the shofar to use. And then he tells us interesting takeaway is that in the middle of the first line, "V'nira li d'mutter li tol shofar chavera below da'ata ulavarechalav." He says that he thinks that if you happen to see a shofar lying around, you could just pick it up and use it to blow the shofar. That's not considered to be stolen, because he says, even though that you're going to maybe mid-kalkel, it's going to get a little bit more worn out from your blowing it, and usually you can't pick up somebody else's object and wear it out or break it or anything along those lines, but he says, but there are a few other examples of things, of cases where you could pick it up, like your friend's talis or your friend's clothing or something, and you could use it, even though it's going to get a little bit worn out. That's not such a big deal.
You're just using it. Is there an assumption that somebody else would want you would since you're doing it for a mitzvah.
Oh, very good, very good. So that's what this is what the right. So the Shulchan Aruch says that exact point in one of the in where the Magen Avraham sent us to. And so I quoted that here in Source 12 by lulav mutar lito lulav shel chaver below dad chaver. You could pick up your friend's lulav b'shar yamim, not the first day, right? The first day the lulav has to you have to right. own it. Afterwards, the nichalela inish lemi oven mitzvah b'mamono. Like Eric just said, because people are usually happy to have their object used for their friend's mitzvah. That's the principle going on here. So yeah, so if you happen to see a shofar just lying around, you could use it. And the Mishnah Brura tells us a few caveats to this rule. The Mishnah Brura in Source 13. Mishnah Brura tells us, just say this outside, it's going to be in the second half of it. He says, first of all, if the owner is there, like you should ask. Here we're basically relying on a chazaka that most people are happy when their object is used for a mitzvah, right? Most people would be happy to have somebody else use their lulav or happy for somebody else to use their shofar. But usually, if you can have a way of verifying the chazaka, that's the better thing to do. So if the owner is there, first of all, you should ask him. Then he says, if you know for a fact that the person is very makbid, the person does not want other people to use their stuff, then you could not pick up their lulav or their shofar or anything like that, right? Because again, you don't have a chazaka that they want it. You know for a fact that they don't like it, that they don't like when other people use it. And then he tells us the third thing is that you also don't move it around, right? Don't take it from this room, put it into that room, this house to that house, right? It's pick it up in its place and then put it back down. I'm not sure with the rationale. I didn't look into the source. It could break or something. Yeah.
It could be yeush. In other words, if the person, the owner.
You think it's totally ownerless? Maybe. I would assume that if somebody left a chauffeur, you know, by their seat or a lulav by their seat.
That's a different story.
Right.
If you found it on the... You didn't say that. You would just said you...
Here, right, okay, I assume it's, you know, you come into this room on Rosh Hashanah and you see right. there's a shofar in a shofar bag or something along those lines.
It belongs to somebody, so you could in fact use it,
unless you know for a fact that the person doesn't want to, and that's not going to be considered to be stolen shofar. Okay, so now we'll take a little bit of a break from our halacha here, and we're going to then talk about how many shofar blasts for the rest of this year. But the discussion about whether there's a mitzvah to blow the shofar or to listen to the shofar might point to two different explanations or two different understandings of the purpose of shofar. So the Rambam in Source 14 tells us, and the Rambam writes of the opinion that the mitzvah is to listen to the shofar. So the Rambam says, "Afa pisha tigiat shofar baras Hashanah gzera takatuv." Right, the Torah says yom trua. The Torah tells us to do it. Remez yeshbo. There's a hint. There's an allusion in the act of blowing the shofar, or I should say, in the act of listening to the shofar. Kolomar oru yishene mishinachem. Wake up. All those who are sleeping, wake up. V'nirdamim hekivzu mitardamachem, and those in a slumber, wake up from your sleep. V'chipsu b'maaseichem, examine your deeds. V'chazru b'tshuva v'zichra borav, return in tshuva, remember your Creator. Ilu hashochichem et ha'emet behevleizman. And then the Rambam says that there's people who forget about the truth just from life and passage of time, and there's people that forget about the purpose of life, what they're supposed to be doing. So the shofar is the blast, is the thing that's supposed to remind you to wake up. And then the Rambam then goes into the Rambam that we noted 2 weeks ago about viewing the world, viewing yourself as 50% merits, 50% demerits, the world 50% merit, 50% demerit. So for the Rambam, a good part of the shofar blowing is blowing it so that everybody listens to the message of the shofar. The shofar, you listen to the shofar, and the shofar reminds us to do tshuva. So if that's the purpose of the shofar, makes a lot of sense that the mitzvah is to listen, right? The point is to listen to it to remind us to do tshuva. So what about the act of blowing the shofar, right? If you say the mitzvah is to blow the shofar, then the question is, how do we fulfill our mitzvah? How do you fulfill your mitzvah? If we hold practically, there's a mitzvah to blow the shofar, how do all of us fulfill our mitzvah?
Well, he says the bracha, we say amen.
Okay, but we didn't blow the shofar. I think you're getting to the right track. He's our shliach. I think that doesn't work for mitzvah that you have to do begufo. You can't ask one of your sons to put on a tefillin for you, or to hold take shake lula for you. It was good. No, it's a good, very good, good answer. But at the end of the day, shlichut doesn't work for a mitzvah that you personally have to do. So our answer is going to be, and there are some achronim who say this, is Shomea Keona. So hold, yeah, you want to question that or?
Bracha Achrona. You have a mitzvah. Is it a mitzvah to do make a bracha Achrona?
That okay. So you're getting that you're yotze from Shomea Keona. So Shomea Keona works. For brachot and for davening, Shomei Kona works. So how does it work for shofar blowing? How can you use Shomei Kona for shofar? So the answer is, and this is something we mentioned earlier, that it's possible that shofar is an act of davening. Shofar, I think Rav Salvechik has some nice lines about this, is this just basic calling out to God where we don't know the words, we don't know what to say to him, but blowing shofar is a davening. The davening Takarish Baruch Hu. So if you assume it's a davening Takarish Baruch Hu, that the act of shofar is tefillah, then you could say that we even if the mitzvah is actually to blow it, we're all fulfill our mitzvah from Shomea Ka'ona, from us listening to it. We listen to it and it's as if we daven Takarish Baruch Hu by blowing the shofar. So that was very nice. I should have
tell you something that would really cool your mind. Okay. I happen to be very, very skilled at it. Now I could tell you. I don't have the references with me. I have them at home. The thing is, about blowing the shofar, I'll tell you something. It is extremely important to go for hearing the blowing of the shofar. Why is that? Because the thing is, people who are deaf, are very, very, have a harder hearing thing. They are yotzi with the mitzvah of blowing the shofar. Now, what does that mean? The thing is, it is an unusual thing, but this is the halacha of it. I can tell you because I'm very good.
Okay.
Boy, do I know about blowing.
To blow you. Okay.
I've learned this, so I understand it. The thing is, when it comes to blowing the shofar, the thing is, everyone who is deaf, almost deaf, has the obligation to come to hear the blowing of the shofar. Now, the question would be, well, how would one hear it if they can't hear if they're deaf? Amazing. I find this absolutely. What do? They take their shoes off. Now, what happens is when the blowing of the shofar occurs, your feet are on the ground. The vibration of the shofar is so strong that when it emits, when it comes out, the sound comes from it.
Uh-huh.
Yes, when it comes out. From the shofar, the thing is, the sound vibrates on the floor. And when the sound vibrates on the floor, the person actually hears the blowing of the shofar from his feet. And that is amazing. And because of this, it is halakhically okay to do this. So it was ruled in the United States by the OU.
Oh, yeah?
That says that it is perfectly legitimate and his favorite to do so. This is why I've seen a whole class of hearing
people.
They came in for the blowing of the shofar. They come in, I see they take their shoes off. And first I thought they were all Kohanim.
I didn't know. That's very interesting.
The thing is, you go and then put our hands down on the floor to hear. And you should see how that vibrates on the sound, vibrates on the floor. And as it vibrates on the floor, you can feel it in your feet. As long as you know you have.
Okay, very interesting. Very interesting.
That, okay. You hear the shofar blow.
Very good. Very good. Very good. That I didn't know. Yeah, very good.
Isn't that something?
Very interesting. Yeah, very, very interesting.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay. So. Oh, so that's so. Just I'm sorry, I didn't bring a source about the tekiah as Shomea Ka'one, as this like basic crying out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that would be the way to understand it. If we assume the mitzvah is to blow the shofar, we all fulfill it from Shomea Ka'one, from listening to it, and that only works for davening. We mentioned at the beginning that your shofar is bent. So that because of davening, it's better to be bent. The Gemara, I don't remember if I quoted this. Is the Gemara that talks the Gemara's well. You have to blow shofar in the middle of davening as part of Malchio, part of Zichron, part of shofar. That seems to be connected to davening. There's a Gemara that suggests that you might not have even been Yotze, at least Lechachila, you might not be Yotze, you're davening if you didn't blow the shofar along with it, which sounds like the shofar is a key component to your davening. At the end of the day, we're not going to we don't paskin, if you don't have a shofar, so you would do Chazor HaShas without a shofar, but There's a few sources to support that idea. Okay, so the next, we have 10-ish more minutes. Maybe we'll come back to source 15. Source 15, or you can see it on your side. Pnei Halacha talks about the difference. The difference between a tekiah and a truah, and what each represents and what each is symbolic of. That's the source 15. So maybe at the end we'll come back to that if we have a few minutes. So now, how many shofar blasts do we need to blow? Okay, so the Gemara says in source 16 from Rosh Hashanah Amud Aleph Amud Aleph, Uminayin l'shalosh shel shalosh shalosh. How do we know that we need to blow three groups of three? Okay, so three groups of three is nine. We'll come. We're getting there. How do we know? It starts from this. Okay. How do we know we need three groups of three? Talmud Lomar, the Havarta Shofar Trua, because the Torah says one time you should blow Havarta Shofar Trua. That's by Yovel. Then it says Shabbaton Zichron Trua. Then it says Yom Trua. There's three psukim in the Torah that tell us about blowing shofar. So now, what do we see from the Gemara that we started off already, and from source 3 we started off with? Each shofar has to have a tekiah, a truah, and a tekiah. So if you need three tekiah, truah, tekiah, tekiah, truah, tekiah, tekiah, truah, tekiah, you got nine. Three of each set. Okay. And this is what the Rambam tells us in source 17. The Rambam says, how many tekiahs that you have to do? So you have to blow nine. And he says it's from the Gemara, the one Gemara that says that each one needs to have each trua needs a tekiah before and a tekiah after, and this Gemara that says that we need three sets of it. So three times three is nine. Fine, good. So now we have nine shofar blasts. So how do we get to 30? So the Gemara in source 18, also from Lamed Amud Aleph, says Itkin Rabbi Abahu b'Kesari. So Rabbi Abahu made a takana tekiah. Shlosha shvarim trua tekiah. His takana was, when we blow shofar, we really need to blow tekiah, shvarim, trua tekiah. This is what he says. And now the Gemara has a lot of questions on this. Okay, the Gemara says, first question, manavshach. Why? Why do you have to do both? So I should have pointed out that we're not really sure what the truah was, and in some places they were doing it like what we would call a shvarim, and in some places they were doing it like what we would call a truah. The shvarim is more of a groaning, sighing, moaning kind of thing, and the truah is more of a whimper, crying kind of sound. So some places were blowing it as like that moan, sigh, and other places were blowing it as a cry. So now the Gemara says, manavshach, eat yulule yalil. So why does it matter? If the trua is a crying sound, li'avit tekiah trua tekiah. So then just blow tekiah trua tekiah. Why are we blowing a shvarim? Ve'i genuchei ganach. And if it's a sighing or a moaning, li'avit tekiah shlosha shvarim v'tekiah. Then blow the tekiah shvarim and tekiah. Why are we doing both? Why are we doing everything here? So the Gemara says, misafkale, because there was a doubt. E ginuche ganach, if it's a moaning like a shvarim, or e yulule yalil, or if it's like a trua, but it gets more complicated. So now matkiv la Rav Avira. Rav Avira asks the dilma. What did Rabbi Abahu say? Rabbi Abahu said to tekiya shvarim trua tekiya. So now the question is the dilma yulule yahave v'kamit mafsik shlosha shvarim bein trua tekiya. If really, the real sound is a trua. Now you just interrupted it with your shvarim. That interruption, you made a hefsek in your shofar blast. You're supposed to have a tekiah, then the generic trua, whatever that exactly is, then the tekiah. You just did a hefsek. That shouldn't be okay. So the Gemara answers, no, the hadar of a tekiah, trua tekiah. No, afterwards you should do a tekiah, just a tekiah, trua tekiah, just in case the shvarim wasn't the right note, and it was a hefsek. It interrupted your previous tekiah, shvarim, trua tekiah. So just do tekiah, trua tekiah. Period. Okay, we're gonna have the same exact question, the reverse. Matkiv la Ravina. So Ravina asked, the Dilma Ginuche Hava, really, maybe the Trua was what we call a Shvarim. The Kamafsika Trua Bain Shvarim Tekiah. And now we're going to be Mafsik. It should have really been Tekiah Shvarim Tekiah. And when we did Tekiah Shvarim Trua Tekiah, we just put a Trua in the middle. We cut off our Tekiah from the book, from bookending it. We made a separation. So Gemara says, no, the Hadar of it Tekiah Shvarim Tekiah. No, because afterwards you're going to also do just the Tekiah Shvarim Tekiah just in case that's the real one. Hold on. And now for the clincher, Ella Rabbi Abahu Mayitkin. So now, hold on. What did Rabbi Abahu do? Rabbi Abahu, I ginuche ganach ha'avde, I ule yalil ha'avde. We just said, you should blow tekiya trua tekiya. And we said, you should blow a tekiya shvarim tekiya. One of those has got to be the real thing, right? What was the point of Rabbi Abahu telling us, do tekiya shvarim trua tekiya? It's totally unnecessary. It only led to questions that we had to say, well, really, you have to do each one because we're not sure. To which the Gemara says, okay, Misafgale dilma ganach v'yalil. Maybe the trua is both. What we call shvarim and trua, what we call shvarim and we call trua, biyacha together, that's when the Torah says yom trua, the trua is really both of those. So now, yeah.
One more question then.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then you should do it both ways.
Very good. The Gemara's next question. I do a lot of questions here. The Gemara says, ihachi li'avin nami yipcha, do it the other way. Tekiya, trua, shlosha, and then shvarim, and then tekiya, because maybe, right, we don't really know what it is. Dilma yalev l'ganach. So the Gemara says, no, that can't be. Stama demilta, ki mitra be'inish milta, beresha ganach la'adu yalev. The true is supposed to be this crying sound, and nobody cries first by crying and then by moaning. The way of crying is, first you start to sigh, you moan, you get a little bit worked up, then you start crying. So that's not, when the Torah, I think Targum Unkla says Yom Tru is Yom Yalala, like a day of crying. So the question, the Gemara says crying, that's not how people cry. But yeah, excellent question. Good question. Okay. So now we have our 30. Now we have our 30, right? Because you need three groups of each of them. So you have Tekiya Shvarim Trua Tekiya, that's one. Tekiya Shvarim Trua Tekiya. Tekiya Shvarim Trua Tekiya. So your first three of those is 3 times 4 is 12. Then Tekiya Shvarim Tekiya. Tekiya Shvarim Tekiya. Tekiya Shvarim Tekiya. That's 9. And Tekiya Trua Tekiya times 3 is 9 also. 9 plus 9, 18 plus 12 is 30. And now we have our 30 blasts. This is where it comes from. But, you know, it's even a little bit more complicated because there's a big machlokas how to understand this Gemara. Rav Haigaon and the Rambam. So I saw this quote. Rav Haigaon understood the Gemara is that really, mi d'oraita, we need 9. The Gemara says, shalosh, mi d'oraita, we really need 9 blasts. And what Rabbi Abahu came to do was he wanted to create a uniform practice in Klal Yisrael. He wanted everybody to be doing the same thing. So he said, and this is going to tie us also back into what we started off with, Yom Trua Yelachem. The Torah says Yom Trua. However you want to do a Trua, that's going to be a Trua. You don't have to do it one way or another. As long as you're doing it, it's one of these kosher ways. So, Rabbi Abahu then came along and said, okay, really, midoraisa, we need 9 of them, but for a uniform practice, so everybody should do the same things, so that I think the way that the Pnine Halacha says it, because maybe some people would have thought that, you know, your place did it this way, you only did a true, and you went to a place that did shvarim, so now you thought, oh, those people don't know anything, they don't follow Torah mitzvah, that's not kosher. So he created this uniform practice that everybody would have had, everybody was always doing the same 30 blasts, no matter where you were in the entire world. You were doing 30 blasts, but really, midoraisa, really, really, 9 of them are the doraita, and it doesn't even matter which 9. I guess you could argue 12 of them are the doraita if you wanted to start off with tekiya shvarim trua tekiya. You would say that those 12 would be the doraita. Basically, your first set of 3 would be your doraita. The Rambam and I didn't quote this inside, but the Rambam understood that the whole Rabbi Abahu's whole problem was we really just had a doubt about what we were doing. There was a doubt about which is the quote-unquote real trua, right? For the Rav Haigaon, it didn't really matter. Yom trua could be any way you want. For the Rambam, we had this doubt about what the real trua is, and then, really, those first 30 are d'oraita, because you gotta make sure suffix d'oraita, we gotta do all of our permutations so that we're fulfilled the mitzvah d'oraita. That would be the two different ways to understand this Gemara. Okay, so now we're up to 30. But we know that we have a lot more to go. So the Gemara.
So much for uniformity.
The women are only obligated for the 30.
So the women are actually, because it's the mitzvah asei shazman grama, me'ikar adin, the women are not even obligated. It's a mitzvah that I think that women have accepted upon themselves.
Yeah.
But in other words,
the other ones that we do.
We're going to be right. Those are going to be extra ones, right? That they're not. Yeah.
I don't know, are we even?
So we're going to see that we kind of are.
I don't know about that.
We kind of are. I mean,
I think we are.
We kind of are because the shofar... There's a whole, actually, if we wanted to have another shiur on this, the shiur on this would be, and it, we also have to see the next source before we fully get this, is that we know that we do our 30 before Dom, before Shmona Esrei. We do 30 right. Last before Shmona Esrei, and then and then we do another 30 in Shmona Esrei. Right. Each time we do 10. Uh-huh. Each Malchus is a Chon HaShofar. The question is, which 30 are we using to have fulfilled our mitzvah? And that's a big, big machlokas we're showing him, actually. Which are the 30 of the blasts? I mean, I know we said the bracha at the beginning, but really, we're supposed to have them in Shmona Esrei. That's right. Where they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be part of Machiel Zechron and Shofro. Uh-huh. So, I guess the same thing for us, maybe for women too, it's probably... I mean, the general practice, I mean, for not only for women, for somebody who's homebound, etc., somebody who just can't make the shul, right, you're going to just blow 30 for them, through that, they fulfill their mitzvah, though, right? But the question is a very interesting question about which and why we make our bracha earlier. If we just actually skip for a second to source 24, the Shulchan Aruch tells us that we should not have any conversations or interruptions between the 30 before Shmona Esrei and the tekiyot that we're going to be blowing in Shmona Esrei. He says you should not have any conversations. If you did, you don't have to go back to make the bracha, but you there's no hefsek. It's all part of the bigger mitzvah. So. That's like maybe next year we'll talk about that would be a good topic for next year about which of these do we fulfill our mitzvah with, right? Okay, so now to get us, why do we even blow 30?
If you're saying which do you fulfill your mitzvah with?
That's what they're right.
So then, if it's one or the other, I'm just thinking whether you need to hear all of them. If you only hear 30 of them, you're not even sure there's a suffix of which is the mitzvah. So if you hear one set of 30,
right,
and this set of 30 is really supposed to fill the mitzvah, so did you fulfill your mitzvah then with the first 30?
So I think it's ideally. I think the question is which of them are you supposed to fulfill
your
mitzvah?
You're covering your bases by saying
ideally, if somebody came and they heard those first 30 and then they left and then they didn't hear any shofar after that,
according to one opinion, it may not be. If you're still, right, you're going to argue which is the really...
Right, I have more research. I think a lot of the Rishonim, this isn't like a more recent, this is a lot of the Rishonim, I think, talk about which of them you fulfill your mitzvah. Because it's from the Gemara. Why do we even blow 30 blasts before Shofar? I mean, before Musaf. Why are we blowing these before Musaf? So the Gemara in Source 20 says, from Shav, Rosh Hashanah, Ted Zayin, Amud Aleph, Tamud Bet. We'll just skip to the end for the interest of time. The first half of the Gemara there is Gemaras that we had seen up till now, just quoted outside. So top of page 4, the middle of the line, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak asks an interesting question. Lama token b'Rosh Hashanah? Why do we blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah? To which the Gemara immediately responds, Lama token? What do you mean? Why do we blow shofar? Rachmana Amar Tiku. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us in the Torah blow shofar. What are you asking? Then the Gemara says, no, Ella, he was really asking, Lama Meri'in? Why do we blow Trua? The Gemara says, Meri'in? What do you mean? Rachmana Amar Zichron Trua. The Torah says, Trua. You have to blow a Trua. So what's his question? Ella, the question that Rabbi Yitzchak wanted to know is, Lama token umirin kishahin yoshvin v'token umirin kishahin omdin. Why do we blow shofar while we're sitting down, which is a reference in your machzer, in your sitter, you see the tekiot demiyushav and the tekiot demiumad. So the tekiot before davening are the tekiot demiyushav, because theoretically you could sit down for them. In Shmona Esrei, you're standing, so you're not sitting down. So his question is, why are we blowing shofar blasts before, and why do we blow shofar blasts during Shmona Esrei, during Musaf? And his answer is, kidei arbeif hasatan, to confuse the satan. This is what the Gemara says, confuse the satan.
I don't like that answer.
Okay, we have to understand that answer. It's the Panini Halacha quotes at least 5 ways to understand
it. We need all the help we can get.
Okay. So this is the Tekiyot Demiyushav. I think here Panini Halacha quotes that in some Sephardi communities, I think that they'll sit down for it, but in Ashkenazi communities, we stand. That's our minhag is to be standing. So you stand, maybe good to stand up for a mitzvah. We stand.
They're always sitting while we stand.
Right. Okay.
We'll get so, it together, one of them.
Yeah, one day. Yeah. I was davening once in the shul, and there was a kaddish, so I stood up and I looked around the room, and I was the only one standing, so then I sat down.
No, I read that. Supposedly, if you're in a Sephardi, you're supposed to
do what they do, yes. Yeah. I sat down. I wasn't expecting.
You're in
a shul,
and maybe you're out of town, and you're in a shul, and you're saying kaddish, and it's a new Sephardi shul, but you should really
stick to the... Yeah, stick to the... Sidetrack. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so the Penine Halacha in the second paragraph, oh, it's a little bit late, so we'll just try to wrap up soon. Okay. In the second paragraph in source 21, he says, Mevor b'talmud, he quotes the Gemara, k'dei la'arbe v'asatan. So skip to the second line. Pirush Rashi. So Rashi says, Shekasher yishma satan sheyisrael mechabedin et ha-mitzvot. The satan is going to hear that we love the mitzvot, so much so that we're blowing these extra shofar blasts. Umosifim litko yoter mimashet sifta otam ha-torah yistatmu ta'anotav. His claims that when he's trying to prosecute us, they're going to get, he's going to get jumbled, they're going to get closed up. It's, his attempt to prosecute Klal Yisrael is going to get closed because he's going to be telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they don't do mitzvahs, they don't do this, they don't do that, and behind him, we're going to be doing even more shofar blasts. So I don't know if, I'm sure somebody must say this, but or I probably heard it somewhere, but it's also, we started off Yom Teruah, like a day of Teruah. Mm-hmm. It seems that there's going to be some leeway where we would say, well, mid oraita, would have to blow X amount of blasts just to satisfy that basic requirement, but to turn it into a real Yom Teruah, we're going to blow more. Could be that that's a source or something behind the scenes here that we're showing that we're following the Torah, we're following the Torah to in an optimal super lechadchila. I don't know where we're taking it. We're going further than we even had to. It's a little bit similar to benching, where really benching you're supposed to be full, but we bench when we're less full, and the Gemara Brachos praises us for even benching when we ate even less than we needed to. I think it's a bit similar. Okay, that's one. Haramban pirush sheyesh b'koach ha-tekiot skula lekashet Yisrael avim shebashmaim. The tekiot somehow connect us to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Va'idei kach datan shel satan mit arbevet b'tekiot harishonot. The eno yochel lekashet beit ha-tefila. The satan, it's going to throw him off because we're going to have this somehow. He doesn't explain here. I'm sure the Ramban explains it. Although it probably is would be harder. Maybe it sounds kabbalistic. Somehow the shofar connects us to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that act of us being connected during davening is going to throw the satan off. He's not going to be able to say anything bad against us while we have this connection to God. There's another explanation that the satan only has permission to do one prosecution. And when we start to blow shofar, the satan is going to hear us blowing shofar, he's going to start prosecuting, and then when we're davening, where the satan is going to try to do some type of prosecution to make our davening less effective, he's not going to be allowed to, because he already spent all his prosecution points. He already spent all of them before when we were doing it the first time. That's a different explanation. Od amru she'ikar hitkaluto shel satan b'yetzer hara. This is the Ran who says that the satan manifests himself in the yetzer hara. And when we hear the shofar and the call to tshuva, like we said from the Rambam, it's going to inspire us to do tshuva, and the satan is going to be less effective because we're going to have already been inspired to do tshuva. And the last one is, I think, from Penine Halach, it tells us a very interesting one. He says it could be that may rov heat rakshut pamim shadam me'abed et hakavana haru'uyo. Sometimes, maybe like Eric, you're saying like hard to listen, or you don't have the right kavana. He said people are so emotional or so ready for shofar blast that they sometimes miss a little bit, or they're not fully in tune with it. So it kind of, like, my understanding of this is it gets your nerves out of the way, right? You heard it already, so now in davening, where, like we said, the Gemara says to blow the shofar machas achorn shofar, you already are more calm and it's easier for you to focus on the later shofar blast because we already did some of them. So an interesting psychological perspective. So this is what the Gemara says. The Gemara doesn't exactly tell us how many. I don't know where and when the minhag was to do all the 30 doraita before, but the Gemara here, we know that you need to do 30 doraita like we just saw, and now we see that you need to do more shofar blasts before davening, so you're doing more, right? That's how many more. Somehow the minhag became to do all the 30 before, as far as I know. And then the question is, how many blow in silent in Shmona Esrei? And there's probably like 25 different options for how many you're blowing.
You don't do another 30 with
We do another 30, but I think some of the Rishonim suggest there's different permutations. Okay. I think from years past in Harare Kedem, the Sefer on Rav Soloveitchik's Torah, he goes through a lot of the different combinations. I think some of the Rishonim say in Malchiyot you should just blow Tekiah Shofarim, Teruah Tekiah. and then in Zichrona you should blow, and then you should blow a tekiya, shram tekiya, then you should blow a tekiya, true tekiya. Right, not everybody, there's a lot of different permutations as far as I know about. I think actually, I think in the footnote Pinin Elachi, he says four. He has the four. There's four different ways that the Rishonim will all talk about how you should
doing
blow it.
Total 30 within the.
No, table. No, not all of them. Not all 30. Of them, no. Some of them have a total of 10. Total of 10.
So then
a total of 10 or a total of 30, and if it's a total of 30, there's multiple ways to arrive to that.
There's multiple ways you could see, but if you're not doing the total of 30, then you're not really, and you have the opinion that holds that the main mechiv is during davening,
right?
And then we have to have the 30 to cover the bases,
so right? You're not really understand it, right? So I think so. That's what I think Rav Salvechik and others, they try to explain how could, I think, I don't want to say the wrong, maybe the Rif or some of the major Rishonim, they should say you should only do that. And I think the answer is that you fulfilled your Deoraita already. They would say you fulfilled your Deoraita already. So we have to do some, but who said you have to do another three sets of three in each? I think one of them says once you already fulfilled your Deoraita, we don't want to, you know, hold people up, just be blowing all these extra shofar blasts. So this is, right now, we're going to assume we're up to 60 now. We're going to assume we're up to 60 from the 30 before and the 30 during. So as we know, there's a common practice to blow 100 shofar blasts. So that is based on a medrash that Tosfot quotes in Rosh Hashanah, that the mother of Sisra cried, I think the medrash here says 100 times. I think some of the places quote it maybe as 99 times or something like that. I'm not sure if we have this medrash in our version of the midrashim, but this is what Tosfos quotes. The Pnine Halacha in source 23 tells us that this actually is a pretty late minhag in terms of shofar blasts. Is that during the times of the Rishonim, the Gaon and the Rishonim, they were not blowing 100 shofar blasts. They probably were blowing in the ballpark of 60, give or take 60. Then the Arizal established al pi Kabbalah people also quote this medrash from Tosfot, but it's the Arizal in the, I don't know, 15 or 1600s, in the 1500s, who then started this minhag to do 100, which is widely prevalent, as far as I know, the minhag really is to blow 100, maybe for Kabbalistic reasons, but the minhag is to blow 100. That's going to be our jump from 60 to 100. How you do that, there's lots of different options and lots of different minhagim. I remember growing up, the shul that we went to, so we did it different than, the art scroll has like a few options there, we did it different than all of them for those last 40, there's also an interesting minhag that developed about blowing them in the silent Shemona Esrei or not. So the Pinyan Halacha here also talks about that. On the one hand, you want to blow them in Shemona Esrei, so you blow them when you're in Musaf, so you blow them when you're davening Musaf. On the other hand, maybe the Chazar Hashatz is the more important of the two, or I don't know if more important is necessarily the right word, but
It's more practical.
It's definitely more practical. That's what he quotes. It's more practical because people don't have to. You can focus more on your davening. You don't have to worry about going fast or too slow to catch up or listening to the shofar. I've heard stories where people started talking because they were just waiting for so long for the guy to blow shofar. Forgot. I don't know if that's true or not, but it, from a practical perspective, it's easier to not blow shofar during silent Shemona Esrei. The minhag Sfard is to blow it during silent Shemona Esrei. The Minhag Ashkenaz generally is not to blow it. But yeah, those are the.
So if the Sfardim, you said the Sfardim blow it during the
silent Shemona Esrei, yeah.
So would it, when, if you're davening, okay, so then you have to like stop.
So if you're davening, what you should try to do is you should try to estimate, I guess if you daven in the same place every year, at the same chazan every year, you'd be better at this. Estimate how fast the chazan's going,
right,
and try to finish each section about the same time, right, and wait for him. Okay. If not, the Pinyan Halacha says, so you daven at your own pace, and you stop when the guy blows shofar, okay, and you blow it. Okay. And in that place, they're going to have blown 30 before, 30 during Shemona Esrei, and 30 during Chazar Hashatz, so they would only have to do 10. They'd only have to do 10 at the end. Mm-hmm. That would be the numbers. Okay, so this was our final topic, and we already saw the last source about interrupting, that it's not to interrupt between the bracha that we say beforehand and and the chauffeur blasts that you're gonna do. The interesting thing about interruption, this is also a separate shear about what interruptions that are allowed, is that generally you are allowed to interrupt if you're going to be talking about doing the mitzvah or talking about davening or something like that. It's good to like look over your friend's shoulder to see what page it's on, but you could probably also to say, hey, what page are we on? Because that's something that has to do with davening, so that's not really going to be as much of an interruption. Just like in Bedikat Chametz, right? You could say, wait, how many did we have? Or this is our ninth one, or whatever your interruptions would be. That interruptions, or you could say, pass the salt after you wash before hamotzi, because it's something that has to do with the mitzvah, so that wouldn't necessarily be a hefsek. But this the idea of making the bracha and not having those unnecessary interruptions between the two. Okay, so this was our more halachic shir about shofar. We had a whole bunch of different halachot. Talked about the mitzvah being tekiah or shmiah, blowing it or listening. And then we spent a good chunk of time really going from the gemaras. It's the gemaras that are establishing how many shofar blasts we have to do. And I think there was something that we skipped inside from the Pinine Halacha, where he says that Rebbe Abahu's Takana, right? If you understand the Rambam, that we just didn't really know the shofar blast, we lost the sound of the trua, then we have to blow 30 because it's a suffix d'oraita, you have to blow 30. If you have to understand like Rav Haigon, which is I think the way that the Pinine Halacha is presenting it, then me'ikar din, your first nine, your yotze d'oraita. But he says, but Rabbi Abahu made a takana in the year 300 or when Rabbi Abahu was living, and it's a takana that became so widespread that you would not. You have a chiyuv to blow 30, no matter which way you slice it. So, okay, so everybody should have a shana tova.
Maybe your 40 at the end will put in their